Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Negotiation Podcast. I am your host, Todd Embley. And today I am joined once again by Jacob Cook, CEO of WPIC Marketing and Technologies, to unpack the significance of Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney's visit to Beijing, the first by a Canadian Prime Minister in 8 years. Jacob provides a timely analysis of what this visit signals for Canada-China relations after nearly a decade of diplomatic and trade tensions. The discussion focuses on why the visit itself matters, particularly as Canada navigates U.S. tariffs, economic pressure at home, and shifting global trade dynamics. The conversation explores what Canadian businesses are hoping to see from the trip, including reduced friction, improved market access, and momentum on long-standing trade issues affecting sectors such as agriculture, seafood, and pet food. Turning to consumer brands, Jacob examines how Canadian companies like Lululemon and Arc'teryx continue to compete in China amid the rise of Guochao and strong domestic players such as Bosideng. He explains why success in China is less about nationality and more about performance, quality, and lifestyle positioning. Finally, the episode looks ahead at whether a diplomatic reset is necessary for renewed Canadian investment in China and how improving political ties can help restore confidence in boardrooms, even without immediate policy breakthroughs. Enjoy.
One of the things that we are very optimistic about is the Saskatchewan premier. And for those who don't know, he's on the trip. He oversees what is kind of the agricultural base of Canada. So a lot of what China does consume is mainly Western Canadian products in terms of numbers. So canola is a big deal, and that's such a big deal for Canadian farmers because it's the only market in the world, really. There is no secondary market or countries that consume more of that. You know, we're still locked out of pet food, having a hard time with pork and poultry and seafood as well. So lots of areas where Canada has a great supply that we're just trying to get market access to. And I think that, you know, we're really hoping once the dust settles on Saturday and everyone's back in airplanes that, we get a lot of good news here.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to the Negotiation, brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies. Jacob, welcome back to the Negotiation Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We need to talk to you, Jacob, because Mark Carney, Canada's Prime Minister, just visited Beijing. We want to jump all over this. We want to get the down low. This is pretty significant, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, for being in China for, you know, more than 20 years, it's certainly one of the more significant events in Canada-China relations. It seems it's almost a reset. I mean, we haven't had any one-on-one visits like this in over 10 years. So it's very important. The business community is very much behind this.
Okay. Now, what might corporates be expecting from this visit?
Yeah, well, so we're guessing a few things because you never do know, right? But I mean, one of the things that we are very optimistic about is the Saskatchewan premier. And for those who don't know, he's on the trip. He oversees what is kind of the agricultural base of Canada. So a lot of what China does consume is mainly Western Canadian products in terms of numbers. So canola is a big deal, and that's such a big deal for Canadian farmers because it's the only market in the world, really. There is no secondary market or countries that consume more of that. You know, we're still locked out of pet food, having a hard time with pork and poultry and seafood as well. So lots of areas where Canada has a great supply that we're just trying to get market access to. And I think that, you know, we're really hoping once the dust settles on Saturday and everyone's back in airplanes that, we get a lot of good news here.
Why would that be? I'm just curious on my own of what... Why would those still be facing so much headwind?
You know, I've been asking the same questions. I've seen ambassadors come and go. you know, trade commissioners come and go, and no one's had a really good answer for me on why those issues have still been there. So, you know, having our prime minister come out and deal with these from a very high level, hopefully we can get some answers. Hopefully we can find out what some of the problems are. Some of them we know, and I hope that we're coming to the table, you know, getting rid of some of the barriers that we've put on Chinese enterprises trying to get access to Canada too. It's just definitely a very restrictive relationship. So great, clear dialogue, and hopefully it really is a win-win for both peoples.
I got to ask, and I had this in the back of my mind to ask you coming into this recording, is anything about this trip anything to do with what's going on south of Canada and what's going on there?
Well, it shouldn't have, because, you know, if I've been here for 20 years, I've seen probably three prime ministers that I can remember. You know, if we go back to the first one, you know, back 20 years ago when this started, we didn't have problems with the US. We were building a great independent relationship with China, even though business with the US was booming at all, because we looked at this and thought this is really good for Canadians. Then a couple of cultural gaffes by our previous administration here that, you know, really upset not just the Chinese. I mean, we were just on a global parade of upsetting people there, it seemed, for 3 to 4 years. You know, and now we've got a guy that has a lot of experience doing business in China. He's been here many times. You know, he knows these people. He knows how to deal with them. He's well aware of the culture, how not to upset people. So I think there's a lot of room for optimism here on this visit. And, you know, on Trudeau's second and third visit, we were just holding our breaths, hoping he wouldn't screw anything up. And of course he did. But this is just a different show here right now. And I hope people understand that you've got a real pro now who's been in business for a long time all over the world. And maybe the business community has their champion now that we can actually get stuff done and get these issues done and get back to where we were, you know, about 10 years ago.
Yeah, I will say the pro part is big. I think the Chinese have to respect you, even despite what they might show you in the face, they might show you. They actually have to deeply respect you and appreciate you. And I think Carney has that resume, and he comes in and he has that professionalism that goes very, very far in a place like that, which is probably the headwind that the U.S. faces more and more every day with China. Now, what would constitute a positive outcome from this trip?
Let's get canola back flowing, our seafood, our pork. And I think just general optimism too. You know, one of the things that's not really also maybe a trade barrier, a law per se, but the flow of our kids back and forth, our students, you know, that is really drying up. I would really like to see some initiatives where both ways, you know, if we're going to bridge this massive cultural divide, you know, and really build a long relationship, it's going to have to be multi-generational. And if we don't see the kids coming back and forth, doing exchanges, going to our schools, we're going to their schools, we're learning Chinese, then, you know, I mean, we can do this until we retire, and then who's going to be left to build past that? So I would like all of those things to and just a general sense of optimism that, hey, we're going to devise a relationship with China that's Canada and China only. And they should not be allowing any other relationship with any other country to come in and affect that, because it's just not an effective way of doing business. So I hope that we do have a great bilateral relationship that's not affected by anything going on with the US, and that we focus on what we're really good at. You know, we've seen for years now, 5 years, these new trends in Chinese consumption where the look better, feel better. You know, what is Canada really good at? Really a great, healthy lifestyle, you know, staying warm in the winter, active, you know, and this is really what the consumers here are looking for now. And so, I mean, we want to take advantage of this cycle as much as Canadian businesses can, because to me, it seems like a perfect opportunity. If we don't have the opportunity south like we used to, then we've got to go. And looking east is one of the only places, and quite frankly, logistically, not a difficult place for Western Canada to get to and get their products to.
That's true too. Let's talk about Canadian brands, something like Lululemon, Arc'teryx. How are they managing amid, you know, like the Guochao and competitors like Bosodong? You know, how are they managing that competitive landscape?
Extremely well. They're different examples. I mean, totally different examples, right? Because of course, Arc'teryx is now owned by Anta. I mean, to just think about that. I mean, there was so much opportunity with that particular brand that it wasn't just about buying those jackets, but, you know, as soon as the president put one on 2 years ago, that's all it took. The brand took off, and it was so valuable that Anta bought it and bought the parent company too, and then took it public. So, you know, that business relationship, I mean, how good was that for you know, the office in North Vancouver and all the design work that goes on in Canada? It was really good. Really good for the economy where I live. So, you know, we look at all these things and then Lululemon as another one, right? I mean, I think the stat that I heard, almost half of the stores that they opened up in 2024 and 2025 globally were in China. You know, so the press, I think, gets the story way wrong, and is, you know, LVMH continuously complains about the lack of luxury. But when are we going to look at the actual product of LVMH and just say, hey, you know what? It's the same stuff. It's overpriced. It's made in the same sweatshops as everything else is. And you know what? Most of the people think I wear this. It's going to be fake anyway, and it's overpriced. So maybe the consumer is coming up, but Lululemon, that's not cheap in China. Or Terex is not cheap in China. Canada Goose is not cheap in China. These are ultra high-end products for, in a lot of cases, in their price categories. They're doing extremely well. So, I mean, they've proven, and the brands in Canada have proven that they can attract at that price point. And where these competitors are coming in, if they're going to come in on a lower price point, and China's going to be really, really good at that. You know, Bolsodong made a lot of those jackets for those Canadian competitors too. So think that they're not going to be tough competitors, but in no way do I believe for a second that there is a mass movement to buy China for nationalism's sake. We have to give these brands a lot of credit for making products at the right price point at the market. And a lot of cases where these Chinese competitors have real advantages, they don't care about any market in the world outside of China. We saw it with Perfect Diary. You know, what did they do? They went in and looked at the entire market for lipstick in China, realized it was between 80 or 90% of lipstick sold between 109 and 119. Well, they made lipsticks right there, like 112, 113, 114 renminbi. Couldn't care less what the market was in Japan or the United States. They just focused on China. They did really well. And people unfairly, I think, said that that was due to nationalism and didn't give Perfect Diary and these other brands real credit for making really, really good products at really good prices. So they're going to be under pressure, not just in this market from those brands, but they're going to be in the entire world, basically. And that's not that would neither be helped. In fact, it's probably better that they're competing here against those brands in China than just say another one of the market. They're stronger because that they're competing against them in China.
Do you think Carney's coming from a position of strength? Do you think he's traveling there from any kind of weakened position, given that there obviously is like quite a major threat, nothing damaging super yet, but like a threat to Canadian economy because of all the tariffs that the U.S. has put on? Do you think we're in a little bit of a desperate situation to try to rebuild those ties with China?
I would really like to think that this visit would have happened regardless. I think that, yes, that he obviously negotiating from positions of strength is better, but he's not totally weak. And he also has built up a lot of capital and relationships through his career that he's going to be able to cash in for Canada now. And we see him doing that. So I think he's able to negate a lot of the previous damage, but for how long and how much of that capital has been cashed in, I don't know. Again, we're really going to have to wait and see till what happened on Saturday. And hopefully we can talk about this visit in the post view again, because I think, you know, the potential is a lot could change, but also the danger is that if a lot doesn't, then maybe this isn't going to be the big reset that we're all hoping for.
Yeah. And I think that's a good idea. I think in a couple of weeks, we should pump out another one just on the post real quick and get the takeaways. Can you tell us, I actually haven't looked, what is the agenda for this trip as far as talking points or even places he's going?
Yeah. So with the premier and a couple other, the ministers today, there's pretty good dialogues. And again, he's brought from the Canadian side a premier with him too. So we're expecting good news on the agricultural front today. There's going to be a couple of events throughout the city on Friday. There is also a business dinner on Friday night. I'll be attending a couple of those events. So I'm looking forward to meeting the Prime Minister and finding out, hopefully, if we get a chance to discuss what the plans here and how those meetings went. So if there's great news, Todd, I will definitely be the first to know. We'll break it here.
Do Canadian brands need Carney to reset ties to invest in China again? And that's the assumption that they aren't.
No, the brands that have access here, which is the majority of our brands, like Lululemon, Canada Goose, do not need Carney to come in and help them. They are killing it and they're going to continue to kill it. We've got a lot of brands that are doing really, really well here. I think primarily we're looking at a lot of our big categories, though, in Canada that still don't have access. But no, if you've got access to this economy and you've got a product that does well over e-commerce, this is the biggest market in the world. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Would it be the brands then in categories that definitely face, whether it's kind of their own tariffs or restrictions or, you know, these are the ones, textiles obviously isn't getting hit that much.
Yeah. Textiles don't get hit at all. We see some regulatory with our cosmetics and nutraceutical brands. There's some sub issues there, but it's not a full access issue and there's not rules that are applied to this category. So we might have product bans on certain things, but in the nutraceutical cosmetics, at least those bans are countrywide. They're not Canada specific. Where we have the specific problems in Canada is those areas like I was talking about, where pet food, that specifically, a lot of our factories have been waiting so long for access. What they've done is they've just opened up factories in the US and they're selling into China from the US factories. So not only is it dangerous that we lose access, but our entire pet food industry could leave Canada and go to the US solely because we can't have access to China, which is enough to move your factory out of Canada. So there's really big issues here at play for the Canadian economy. And that's a big one. Canola is massive, you know, for the people of Saskatchewan. There's no other place really that buys canola. So if we don't have a market in China for that, then we don't have a market, period. These are real, real big issues for a lot of Canadians, especially in the western half of the country, that do need to get solved. And Atlantic Canada too. I mean, the seafood issues that they're having has been tough, you know. Luckily, their global market for their products is doing really well, but that's a little bit different than Western Canada. I mean, it is only China. So yeah, there's plenty of good news that could come out of these two meetings for sure. They're not all going to get done. There's no way. We're not that optimistic, but a couple of these big ones that have been hanging out for 5 or 7 years really tells the business community, hey, we're on the right track here.
Is it political tensions that are holding things back?
Yeah. I think that's what holds back Canada. I think we're having a real hard time with our identity and figuring out what we're going to do here, you know, because there's a lot of people who have a lot of ideas of what they don't want to do, but not a lot of ideas on what we should be doing here in Canada. You know, everything we're doing is bad and we're the greatest people. We need solutions here and we need them quick because the rest of the world's figuring this out. You know, Japan, Korea got hit with the same tariffs we did and they're coming out of it extremely strong. Time to get to work from the Canadian side.
A last question. Are Canadian brands potentially benefiting from the US-China tensions?
Are Canadian brands benefiting from that?
From US-China Canadian tension.
That's a really tough call. I don't think anybody's benefiting from a tariff. It's a tough word. But yeah. I will say this. I think they are, and I think there's a point to be made, because Canadian companies, we're horrible international business people. We look south. We've always looked south. And for the majority of our businesses, that's the only market we've ever needed to. And then what happens is, usually once they do really well down south, the Americans, oh, you're a good brand. Come up, buy it, a la Arc'teryx, a la Lululemon, or they go public, and then they take it internationally. So if we don't have access to America like we've had before, it will force Canadian businesses to look globally, and that is going to be a good thing for those businesses in the long run.
But you're saying that we probably have a learning curve in front of us if we want to be any good at it.
We have a learning curve, but you know, we just got pushed off the dock into the lake. So swim, or sorry, you're going to sink.
Yeah.
And the tariffs in the US were the pushing off the dock.
Yeah, I'm never opposed to a bit of a Darwinian outcome, that's for sure. I think it's important. All right. Jacob, thanks very much for jumping in and talking to us about what we can expect from Mark Carney's visit to Beijing. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, let's stay in touch. Thanks for the interview.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We're going to come back probably with Jake in a couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about everything that went down here. Thanks very much for listening from me, from Jake, from everybody at the team, the negotiation. Thanks very much for listening and or watching, and we will see you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.